In a moment, we'll hear New York's Governor Nelson Rockefeller facing the Fourth Estate as Monitor joins today's edition of Meet the Press. Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Ready for the spontaneous, unrehearsed conference of four of America's top news reporters. Their questions do not necessarily reflect their point of view, but may be their way of getting a story for you. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest today was to have been Senator John Kennedy, whom we will interview at a later date. With us today is Governor Nelson Rockefeller of New York. He created a storm in Republican circles across the country this week with the charge that Vice President Nixon has failed to tell the nation where he stands on the major issues of the 1960 campaign. Last December, Governor Rockefeller took himself out of the competition for the presidential nomination. He has said since that he would not refuse a draft. His election as governor in 1958, a year when the tide was running against the Republicans, gained him national attention. He has continued since then to hold the national spotlight. Seated around the press table, ready to interview Governor Rockefeller, are Richard Wilson of the Coles Publications, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, John Oakes of the New York Times, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Governor Rockefeller, if you're ready, sir, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Governor, in December of last year, when you withdrew, you said this, and I quote, "I am not and shall not be a candidate for nomination for the presidency. This decision is definite and final." There have been rumors now that there's been a change. Does that statement still stand?
It does.
You will not, under any circumstances, between now and the convention, declare yourself as a candidate for the Republican nomination.
Is that correct?
Now, Governor, in the statement you issued on Thursday, you said, "This is the crux of the issue, that the people, the Republican Party, and the delegates to the convention have a right to know before, not after the nomination of a candidate, precisely where he stands." Now, is that really the crux, or is the crux that you know where Vice President Nixon stands, and that you disagree with him on major issues?
No, the crux of the issue is just what I said, Mr. Spivak. I really don't know where he stands on some of these issues. And we only have now a little over a month, for a debate within the party on the key issues. After the convention, we will have a party unity. The candidates will be selected, and then we are in the campaign for the fall. Therefore, I think it's of the essence that within our parties there be debate on key issues, just as later there be debate between the parties.
No, but Governor, when you made that statement on Thursday, you said that once the Vice President has made his position clear, I shall be glad to debate these issues with him. Now, isn't that a clear admission on your part that you disagree with him on major issues? Certainly you don't debate when you agree with a man.
Well, that is perfectly fair comment that you're making. On certain domestic issues, I know that we disagree relating to the problem of settling labor disputes, on the question of financing old age health insurance, and on the level of defense expenditures in the international field.
Now, what specific issues? Could you name two or three of the issues that you would like him to make himself clear?
Yes, I think that he ought to discuss both the international situation in the light of recent developments and the level of defense expenditures relating to the posture of the United States from a military point of view in the world, both from the point of view of our own security as a nation and from the point of view of our defense of other free nations.
But Governor, on defense, hasn't he already said that he goes along with the administration and that he is satisfied with our defense posture?
He has said that he was supporting the administration position, but he has also intimated in background press conferences that were various areas with which he disagreed with the administration, but that he didn't feel it was appropriate to make his position clear until after the convention. But at that point, it's too late to have a debate within the party. Now, we happen to have a vice president who's a candidate, and therefore he feels he should support the administration. But the president has said that he thought he ought to speak out on these issues. And I think for the sake of the vitality of our system, the democratic system, for the vitality of our party, that we've got to debate issues within the party. If we go to the convention without this, how do we as delegates know where he does stand on these things? Because he's intimated that he had his own plans and that he would make those known later.
Mr. Oakes.
Governor, your statement very sharply criticized the administration for not having met its duty on defense policies, for surrender to the forces of inflation in respect to the steel strike, for basically unsound medical aid to the aged, and so forth. And those phrases are quoted from the statement. Now, all these, it seems to me, are points of democratic criticism, too. Could you tell us what distinguishes you from a Democrat?
Well, what distinguishes me from a Democrat, I suppose, going back to the basic differences between Republicans and Democrats, the fundamental belief in the Republican Party in individual initiative as the motivating, driving force in our country, the question of civil rights, our position as a party on civil rights, the question of fiscal integrity, which is a fundamental Republican position, which I believe in deeply, as I believe in the others, and the whole concept of local government. Now, these are three or four fundamental issues which, to my way of thinking, differ with the Democrats. On the specific questions which you raise, I differ with them on the financing of old age insurance, because I think the scheme that was proposed is fiscally unsound.
But now, aren't you to be distinguished from Nixon's part of the party in your effort, seems to be an effort to move the party toward a greater reliance on central federal government, more reliance on the expenditure of public rather than private funds to accomplish general or specific ends?
I don't know where...
Well, isn't this the general direction of the policies that you have enunciated?
No, I don't think that would be a fair conclusion. I've taken specific situations. I think the government, the federal government, the state government, local governments have their responsibilities. They've got to meet those responsibilities, both in terms of legislation, create a framework within which people can meet emerging problems, and specific actions by government. But I think that government has got to be conscious in its conduct of its affairs to allow the individual maximum freedom. And I think that takes conscious government action to be sure they don't overrun the individual.
Well, you wouldn't say that you were trying to move the Republican Party a little bit more toward the left than it has been under the present administration.
No. I think it's very dangerous to think of these things in terms of slogans. I think you have to take specific situations and analyze those.
Mrs. Craig.
Well, Governor, if you feel as strongly as you seem to, why didn't you stay in there and fight instead of withdrawing in December?
Because of the political realities of the situation that existed after I'd taken three trips around the United States. It was clear to me that the people who control the Republican organization didn't want competition, that they had pretty generally made up their minds. I had a legislative session coming on in New York State. We had 3 months of legislation, then a month of bill signing. That was during the period when these initial primaries would be held. I had 163 bills I wanted to propose to the legislature, and I couldn't do a massive job of campaigning in the primaries and fulfill my functions as a governor of the state of New York with this legislative session.
Well, Governor, how did you know you were going to get beat until you tried?
I didn't say I was going to get beaten. I just said I couldn't give the time that would be necessary to win.
Well, if you feel the way you say you do now so strongly, and I asked you this at the White House the other day, are you going to try to make the Republican platform the way you think it ought to be and to lead it that way?
Sidney, no, I'm not going to leave it that way. I hope that the party can have a debate now. Now, I couldn't speak out on some of these issues until after the summit conference for fear that it would jeopardize the success of the conference. That's over. I can't do it after the convention because then we've got to present a united front as a party. So this is the time, in my opinion, for all good Republicans to debate and discuss these questions and to hammer out our positions.
Well, then why don't you do that before the platform committee in Chicago? You said you were not going out there to try to hammer it out there.
I don't say I wasn't going out, but I'll have a representative there.
Well, how do you know he represents just what you want?
Because I wouldn't have selected him if he didn't.
Don't you think you'd have more effect as a witness there than almost anybody else?
No, I think New York State has its voice, and the man who's representing our state is extremely able.
But this is a national thing, isn't it, Governor? Not a state of New York thing.
No, but we have a representative on the platform committee, and he will be able to represent the point of view. But the platform won't be read until the convention. That's too late for debate. It'll be prepared. What I feel is important, if democracy is going to actually live up to the challenge which it faces today, the people have got to know what they're up against. They've got to know where they are, where they're going, what they need to do. They've got to have this debated within the parties and between the parties.
Mr. Wilson.
Governor Rockefeller, in as much as you feel, as you have just stated, why would you not accept Vice President Nixon's invitation to have you question him thoroughly on television?
Because, in my opinion, it isn't a question of my just questioning the vice president on these issues. He said that he would refuse to debate me. I asked to debate him. I asked him to state his position on these issues, the principal ones that I'd outlined, and then let's debate them. He said that he, one, would not debate unless I was a candidate, and two, he would not discuss the positions which I've taken. Now, that makes a pretty one-sided proposition.
Well, you merely, the main brunt of your statement, as I read it, was to get from him an expression of views which you thought he had not offered to the public.
That is correct.
Then you want to express your views, too, is that right?
Well, I think that to develop vitality in a party, you've got to have discussion. And I think the public can benefit from discussing these issues. Now, we're in a peculiar position in the Republican Party where the only candidate, apparently, that is in existence for the party, although Barry Goldwater is a favorite son, and he's been endorsed in another state, but he's taking the same position I am. He is discussing these questions. He says he wants to know where the vice president stands on these because he thinks it's important for the party. I think the vice president is in an anomalous position because of his post as vice president. He naturally is supporting administration's action. But we're in a very fast-changing world. New situations have arisen. It's what are we going to do for the future? The public needs to know, and the party delegates need to know.
How could the vice president be nominated for president on a platform or a program which was implicitly critical of President Eisenhower's administration?
Well, I think this idea that you only look backwards when you're living in a time like today has no validity. We've got new problems that have come up. This whole question of the summit situation. What's happening in Japan today? What's happening in Cuba? What's happened in South Korea and in Turkey? These are all new situations that have come up. We can't, because an administration in its wisdom took a position on a situation now, I mean 2 years ago or 1 year ago, with new factors developing in the world, they've got to come up with new considerations. I think what our party wants to know is what are Dick's plans to meet these problems as they're emerging.
Governor, on that very point, you say you think that's what the party wants to know. Mm. What has been the reaction from the grassroots, from your challenge to Vice President Nixon? What has been the reaction from the grassroots?
Well, I think one of considerable interest.
considerable interest.
I do.
Well, have you noticed any overwhelming demand that your challenge be accepted by the vice president and that he outline his program?
Well, the grassroots only speak through the newspapers in the initial days, so I have to take what the newspaper comments are, both news columns and editorials. I think they've taken both sides. Some have said, you can't have this. You've got to have a party in which you don't have this kind of bitter discussion. I don't think it's a bitter discussion. I think this is the essence of democracy. How's our system going to work?
Can you stop his nomination?
Pardon me?
Can you stop his nomination?
I'm not trying to stop his nomination.
You think he will be nominated, as I understand?
It would certainly seem to me.
Governor,
but I think the vitality of the party is at stake here. If he goes to the people, never having presented his basic concept for the future, and then comes out with a plan afterwards, where does that leave the delegates?
Well, Governor, there have been reports that sometime last December you urged Mr. Nixon to do the same thing that you are now urging him to do, to speak out on the issues. Is that correct?
That is correct.
What was his response at that time?
Well, I thought that he felt the same way I did.
That he should?
Yes, and that he would.
Do you think he did?
I don't think he has, to tell you the truth. Here's the basic problem, seems to me. Because an administration has taken a position here or taken a position there, and circumstances have changed, they don't have to hesitate to admit that under new circumstances they need to do different things. I think that the admission of change in a period as fast-moving as this is essential, and I think give the public confidence. I don't think it's a criticism of any individuals to say that what we did 2 years ago or 8 years ago no longer fits new circumstances.
Mr. Spivak.
Have you discussed this matter with the vice president in private? Have you asked him to do this?
The conversation that we were talking about
was
in private.
This was a private conversation.
That is correct.
And did he then, at that time, say he was not going to do it, or that he already...
No, I had the indication. This was back in end of December or early January. I thought that he was going to discuss.
You thought at that time he was going to do it, but since that time he hasn't. Well, now suppose he doesn't do it. What are you going to do? Are you going to support him, whether or not he does it?
I will support him, but I think it's going to make it very much more difficult for him to be elected.
Do you think he will, under such circumstances, be able to carry your own state, which you know something about?
I think it would be far more difficult than if he comes out now, clearly, before the convention. The Republican Party can discuss these things. This business of the public participating in party politics is tremendously important. It's the essence of democracy. And I think the public today wants to feel. It's a very intelligent public in this country, and they want to know what different people feel they're up against.
Are we to understand, then, that what you're really trying to do is to help him because you believe that he runs the risk of being defeated if he doesn't do what you want him to?
I don't put it entirely on the basis of the vice president alone. I think it's far more important for the nation as a whole. I think it's essential for our nation that the people get the benefit of different thoughts on the key issues today. And I think that the administration has done a wonderful job. I think President Eisenhower is one of the great leaders. I think he's a man who has dedicated without fear, just as he's going on this trip now and going to Japan, without fear, without personal thought, his life to the pursuit of peace with justice, to the extension of freedom. But I think times change, and we have to be ready and able and willing. And the vice president himself has indicated this. He's indicated he has plans, but that he doesn't feel he should bring them out until after the convention. I think that's fundamentally wrong.
Governor, one more question. How do you justify this praise of the president that you have handed out to him today and in the past when you condemn the results of his leadership on such fundamental issues as defense, welfare measure, education, medical aid to the aged, and even inflation?
Listen, you don't condemn somebody because you disagree with them on certain points. I think that you've got to have flexibility.
What do you praise when you say that the results of his leadership not been very good in all of these
areas? I think
the
results of his leadership have been superb. I think we're facing new circumstances and we need to do new things. I just believe, Mr. Spivak, in democracy. And I believe in debate and discussion, and I think the American people do. And I think they want these things discussed, and I don't think they want a party to be afraid to say, one group feels this way, the other feels this. In fact, I think the public feels more secure about a party if they feel there's discussion.
Mr. Oakes.
Governor, you just said that you would support Nixon if he is nominated, which seems probable. Well, now, do you mean by that that you will speak for him, that you'll campaign for him, that you'll fight for him?
That is correct, but it's going to be far more difficult for him to be nominated if he has not spoken out and talked and allowed debate within the party. This isn't a personal party. This is the party of the people.
Yes. But your plan would be to go all out for him once he has the nomination, if he gets the
nomination. I think the American people, if they feel that the delegates of the Republican convention representing the 50 states were not told what the sole candidate's position was on major issues until after they'd voted. That doesn't make a very strong position before the American people.
But, Governor, Mr. Nixon said just a couple of days ago that he had actually spoken out some 47 times in the last 5 months on various issues in public forums, programs, and so forth. He has actually taken positions on a great many of the specific points that you spoke of the other day. Since you say that your quarrel is not with the fundamental direction of the Republican Party, but
principles.
Fundamental principles, yes, and their application, then...
Then what has Mr. Nixon got in mind when he says he will come out with his program, that he doesn't feel it's appropriate to differ with the administration on in areas in which he has major differences until after the convention?
Well, he's spoken on a great many of the points that you spoke about
yourself.
Well,
then what are these other
arbitration,
points?
Arbitration, labor management, on health.
But
on
what are these other
many
points?
Many of these things. Well, I don't know, but...
your paper has referred to them.
Do you feel that he is actually concealing or is hiding behind this position that he now has, in a sense that you yourself are not doing, and that you yourself are willing to speak out on any subject?
Yes, and I think he should, and I think the president has stated so in saying that he thought that the vice president should speak out on these. But Mr. Goldwater wants to, Barry Goldwater, Senator Goldwater wants to know where he stands on these issues. I want to know where he stands on
what
these
issues,
and
sir?
On the key issues that face this country.
Mrs. Craig.
Governor, the president
foreign policy, defense, health insurance, so forth.
Governor, the president has said at press conference, when questioned, he feels he is in the best position to know what our defense should be and that
correct.
He is satisfied with it. Mr. Nixon said yesterday, America is today the strongest country militarily and the strongest country economically. Now, on what do you base your criticism? Do you think you know better than they do about defense, or do you think that Mr. Nixon and the president are not telling us the truth?
Now, Mrs. Craig, you've been in Washington a long time, and you know the basis on which a military budget's made up. A figure is given from the Budget Bureau, which is a ceiling under which they operate. And then they, from that point, work out their figures within. I think that we've got to be perfectly realistic about this. There are differences of opinion in our country as to how much our economy can stand in terms of military expenditures without jeopardizing the economy. And that has been a factor and an influence in the level of defense expenditures. The Percy Committee, which made this little report on policies for the Republican Party, stated, we can provide whatever is necessary to ensure our security as a nation. To provide more would be wasteful. To provide less would be catastrophic. In my opinion, we have reached a point where it is essential to provide more. I was chairman of the reorganization of the Defense Department in 1953, listened to the question, all of the top defense officials, the military people, with the panel for over a month. I was worked for the president in 55, a special assistant in international affairs, attended all the Security Council meetings, cabinet meetings, and then was a member of the reorganization committee of the Defense Department again in 57. Again, we questioned all of the military people and went through the entire analysis. So that I have a pretty long-term background in these matters and have listened to the discussions of levels of expenditure, I think these expenditures are necessary in the light of the world situation today.
Mr. Wilson.
Governor Rockefeller, would you agree that the challenge you made to Vice President Nixon probably excuses you from any danger of being nominated or drafted for vice president?
Well, that was a dead issue anyhow, but I think that it certainly wouldn't encourage its being revived.
Well, now you're not a candidate for president, and you will not be vice president under any conceivable conditions.
With no derogatory implications to the vice president.
No, I understand. You're critical of the organization, and you are critical of the position taken by the man most likely to be nominated. I ask this in all seriousness. Are you irrevocably a Republican?
I am. I think that I'm doing the greatest service to the Republican Party that could be done in raising these questions so that the party can have the vitality of discussion. And I think that maybe it would develop after the convention that the vice president is not so far away on a good many of these questions from my position. But I think now's the time for him to declare himself on this.
Well, now, Governor, on that point, the vice president is a pretty busy man. Senator Kennedy is a very busy man. Senator Humphrey is a busy man. All have great responsibilities. They had plenty of time to discuss these issues in the first half of the year. Why didn't you?
Because I didn't feel I should discuss them before the summit conference.
Well, what did that have to do with it?
Because if I had raised some of these questions prior to the summit conference, it might have jeopardized the possibilities of the achievement of the results which the president hoped for, the so-called spirit of Camp David, where it would have been misinterpreted if I'd said what I said in this statement.
What is the
I'm sorry, Mr. Wilson.
Camp David.
I'm talking about military expenditures.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I see that our time is up.
Monitor's thanks to Governor Nelson Rockefeller of New York State and the members of the Meet the Press panel for an enlightening half hour. Those panelists were Richard Wilson of the Coles Publications, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, John Oakes of the New York Times, and Lawrence Spivak, the producer of Meet the Press. And now a word from the Red Cross. Millions have been killed, injured, and left homeless by the earthquakes and floods raging in Chile. New victims are being added every day, with epidemic threatening among the disaster-ridden and the misery increased by severe winter weather. To all of you who would like to help, here is how you can do it. As you know, the Red Cross is your instrument for relief in times of catastrophic disaster. To help the stricken men, women, and children in Chile, give through your local Red Cross chapter. President Eisenhower has urged all Americans to come to the aid of our neighbors to the south. The full extent of the havoc is not yet fully known. The number of sufferers is rising daily as more homes are smashed by even new quakes. Your help for Chile is needed. Give for the victims in Chile through the Red Cross. Give through the Red Cross in your hometown. And so saying, I find that for this week my monitor time has run out.